So just how many ham magazines did you read growing up? We'll hear about one of two that still exists today in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with the September 16th Rain Report. At one time, there were a handful of major ham radio publications, the likes of 73, Popular Electronics, Ham Radio, World Radio, Ham Radio Horizons, Radio Scan, Spectrum, even one called Flying Pigs QRP Newsletter. They all had at least two things in common. One, they catered to the ham radio enthusiast, and two, they were print publications. Today there are only two major ham mags left. One of them is CQ Magazine, whose editor since 1999 has been Rich Moseson, W2VU.
It's the premier independent magazine in amateur radio today. It's the premier independent magazine in amateur radio today. We're not affiliated with any organization, and we don't have an agenda to promote aside from getting the most out of amateur radio. Our focus has always been on the practical and the operating side of things, which is not to say that we don't do technical articles. We do a lot of technical articles and a lot of project articles, but we always try to make sure that they have practical value to the average amateur, and that if you build a project that we have in CQ, then it's going to be something that will add some value to your station or to your enjoyment of the hobby.
How has the market changed for amateur publications the last 10, 15 years?
Well, unfortunately, the market has gotten smaller. In the United States, there are only two general interest amateur magazines left out there. There's QST and CQ. QST, of course, is part of the ARRL, so CQ really is the only general interest standalone magazine in the U.S. amateur market that's not tied in with an organization. There are some others in other countries and some specialized magazines, but we're the only broad-spectrum general interest independent magazine in the U.S. market today. Ham radio is really an umbrella of a multitude of different hobbies. It's very difficult, really, to cover that broad spectrum, to use a bad pun, of interests in amateur radio. But you've got the DXing hobby, the contesting hobby, the rag chewing hobby, the talk on your repeater hobby, the satellite hobby, the moon bounce hobby, the digital hobby, the public service aspect. I won't call that part a hobby. The tinkering in your workshop hobby. There are so many different aspects of ham radio. It's one of the things that makes it fantastic and that it makes it hard to get bored with ham radio in general, because there's always something else, some other avenue to go down. So there's always been a small market for niche publications within our own niche of ham radio. As far as the broader general market goes, it's a function of finding and keeping that critical balance or critical mass between circulation and advertising. Back in the recession of 2008 and 2009, a lot of advertising budgets got squeezed very heavily. Even though the broader economy has come back quite well, according to The Economist and according to Wall Street, a lot of us who are not in the banking or finance industries see a slightly different picture. Everything's moving in the right direction, but very slowly. So a lot of those ad budgets have not really come back full. And a lot of today's people are not gravitating to magazines the way they used to, either print or digital. You know, we have a digital edition, which has the same content as our print edition, and about a third of our readers prefer the digital edition and subscribe to that instead of the print. We provide that option. The people seem to be very much in favor of one or the other. I don't care about either. They either like their print magazine or they like their digital. But it's the whole magazine industry is in a changing situation and in flux. The difficulties that we've been facing over the past 5-6 years are not unique to us or to the amateur radio field. They're very common in the entire magazine business. And the entire industry is looking for ways to get information out to people in the way that they're looking for. People want that information. There's a lot of good information out there, and the methods of delivering it are changing, and we as an industry have to keep up with that. So far, I think we're doing a little better at it than the newspaper industry is doing. Again, everything moves slowly except the pace of technology.
You're listening to a conversation between CQ Magazine editor Rich Mosesen, W2VU, and Rains Hap Holly, KC9RP. We'll resume their discussion in a moment. This is the Rain Report, the weekly podcast of the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com, and in some nebulous place in iTunes. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
See, he was producing two formats in print and digital. So that's probably more costly than choosing one or the other. From a cost point of view, which one would be more cost-effective today?
Well, they each have their own costs associated with them. Obviously, a print magazine has the costs of paper and printing and ink and postage. On the digital side, you have the costs of putting it into the software and storing and distributing, maintaining record keeping and stuff like that. They're each, for our digital host, constantly upgrading their software. And of course, the customers help pay for that in what their costs are. But the reality of today's marketplace is that a digital-only magazine, even though it may be less expensive to produce and distribute, generally is not capable of making it financially. Print is still key to being able to pay your bills. And the combination of print and digital seems to be what's working best industry-wide right now. But there have been magazines that have gone digital only and have gone back to print because they just can't make it digital only. There's an expectation on the internet that everything on the internet should be free, including advertising. Digital only is cheaper with an er, as in less expensive, but not free to produce. But it also doesn't generate the amount of revenue that's required to keep a magazine and publication in any format.
Is that mindset, if it's on the internet and ought to be free, a thought held by millennials as opposed to those of us are used to having magazines in our hands and the smell of the ink and the feel of the paper as opposed to digital?
I'm not sure about that. What I've seen in preferences between the two editions of our magazine is that they don't really seem to be age-related. I've seen plenty of older hams who prefer the digital edition, and I've seen plenty of younger hams who prefer the print. And so I think it's just a matter of personal preference. As far as the concept of, well, if it's on the internet, it ought to be free, I'm not sure there's an age point there either. Perhaps it has more to do with how long you've been doing things on the internet. I don't know. I'm not aware of any studies on that relating to the age of the person. But from our perspective, what I've seen firsthand, there doesn't seem to be an age correlation between preferences for print or digital.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the specials you've been running on some of the old classic books that CQ used to put out as we do this interview at the end of summer here in 2017. You're now re-releasing some of the Don Miller publications. Why are his publications being re-released now?
Don Miller was one of the fathers of de-expeditioning back in the 60s and early 70s, and he went all over the world to these little places and put them on the air and did it on a shoestring budget. It was usually a one or two person operation. It's not like the massive de-expeditions that you see today. You know, there's a de-expedition plan to Bouvet Island early next year that's going to have a couple of dozen people going, and the cost is anticipated to be somewhere in the range of $750,000. Don did a world de-expedition tour, or parts of it, for $10,000 or $15,000 total. It was a different world of de-exing and de-expeditioning. He was active in the 60s and early 70s. And in 1968, we published his DX Handbook, which was a classic now. It was a guide for working DX and being most effective at working DX. We're coming up on the 50th anniversary of that publication. And we've had ongoing requests from people, and so has Don, for reprints of that book, because it has become a classic, and it's very difficult to find, even on eBay, apparently. It's very difficult to find because people who have it don't want to part with it. So we've been having some discussions with Don recently, and we've decided to republish the original 1968 book. People will have to understand, of course, that the technology and the radios have changed, but the basic skills needed to successfully work DX have not changed. And that's the crux of what this book is about. And that's why it continues to be a valuable resource today, and why we think that a whole new generation of DXers will benefit from having access to it.
This has been the first of a two-part Rain Report podcast featuring Rich Moseson, W2VU, editor of CQ Magazine since 1999. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, will conclude his moments with Rich next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2017 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now for our print and digital listeners, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. The Rain Report. .com. Keep on hamming.